This is the GM Authority Debate, Episode 8, for April 1st, 2010. Chevy Impala, and all the other stuff that seems to matter. The GM Authority Debate is brought to you by the GM Authority News Desk. For the latest independent General Motors news, analysis, and a whole lot more, visit gmauthority.com. You can subscribe to this podcast for free. Try searching for GM Authority Debate in the iTunes Store. Welcome to GM Authority Debate. This is a show where we agree to disagree about the most important General Motors topics, and sometimes we may even agree, like Hilton and I usually do. We kind of, anytime we do a debate, we usually agree instead of disagree. It's weird the way that works, so we'll see what happens today. I'm your host, Alex Luft, and joining me today is Hilton Jorson from Ontario, Canada. Hey, Hilton.
Hey, Alex.
How's the weather? We should start with the weather every single time. I like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, fantastic day today. Great weather, sunny out. It was like early summer out there. Probably, I'd say the high 70s.
Wow, yeah, we had...
So, it was... this was the day that... Actually, it was the first day I took my 2010 Camaro out for the season.
Wow. What do you drive in the meantime, in the off days?
I drive a 2004 GMC Yukon.
Oh, that's not bad either.
That gets me through the winter.
Yeah, okay. So, did all the snow melt today?
It's been gone for a while. Like this year, I don't know if anybody had snow other than Buffalo.
Okay, yeah, my mom actually just was in Nova Scotia.
Huh?
She just came back last week, and she said it's cold. You know, the people say, you know, I'm from Russia, and people say it's cold in Russia. Well, it's cold over there too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
No, here. You know, I mean, they got that big body of water that'll freeze things for you.
Mm-hmm.
But, today was a perfect early summer day. No bugs, no humidity. That's the kind of stuff I love, because you take your car out, you can go for a nice drive. When you get home, you look at the front of the car, there's nothing there.
Mm-hmm. And the engine gets that proper, you know, just the perfect temperature to perfectly breathe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it was really nice to get out again with that car. You know, I totally forgot how great it drives, and my biggest thing that kept coming back to me today was that I'm probably going to get some serious tickets this summer.
Well, you know, that you can look at that as a bad thing, but it may not be so bad.
Yeah, well, I'm going to find a way, you know, if it does happen, I'm going to find a way to put the spin on it. So, you know, somehow we can show people that, you know, this is a good car.
Maybe you could tell them that your gas pedal was stuck.
Hey, well, that actually gave me an idea. What I should do is go over to my neighbor's place one night when they're not around,
mm-hmm.
and get a little bit of fishing line and take off the Toyota emblems. And so, you know, if I get the ticket, you know, if I know I'm going to go out there and really get on the pedal, then mm-hmm. I'll just plaster the Toyota emblem on the car first, and then when the cop pulls me over, I've got an excuse.
You know, I don't know if, well, it would depend on what the cop is driving, because some of them may know what a Camaro is from apart from the badges.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it. But then others will look at you weird. You know, you pull up to a stoplight and you have the Toyota badge in your Camaro, and people are like, what are you doing?
Well, yeah, they probably... It would be an embarrassing thing.
As long as you have tinted windows and a non-revealing license plate, you'll be all set.
Yeah, and actually, you know, funny enough, when I bought the car, the day I went to pick it up, and my buddy over at the Chevy dealership's a real joker. And so when the day I picked it up, it was all nice and clean, ready to go. You know, it's like that first sight of looking at this beautiful thing. And I take the walk around. And he goes, oh, let's take a look at the car, make sure it's okay, blah, blah, blah. And then when we get to the back of the car, he's got this big Ford blue oval thing stuck on the bumper. I don't know where he got it. It was like one of these big ones. It must have been from an E350 Econoline van or something, but
right.
He had it plastered there, and it was like, what is this? You know? So
I take it that the dealership doesn't also sell Fords?
No, it's purely Chevrolet.
Okay, all right.
So
at least that's good.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we'll see. Keep us updated. See what happens during the summer. But maybe we could do something with that unintended acceleration issue and weasel yourself out of there.
You know what? Might as well try. Because I think there's going to be a few Camaro guys
right.
in the same situation. So if I can find a solution for them, hey,
right.
all's good.
And then the cops will have a bulletin board announcement saying, you know, watch out for those Camaro guys. They're tricky. They want to pull a Toyota on you. But just watch out for these guys. Here's how the car looks like. This is a Chevrolet Camaro. This is not a Toyota Prius. Not that it could be mistaken for one. So we'll see what happens on that. Hopefully, have fun. You got to excite the soul. That's all you got to do.
Exactly.
As long as you do it safe, you're all right.
Yep.
Let's get to the debate, shall we?
Yep.
I can ring my proverbial, or not, it's not even proverbial, I keep saying that, but it's a digital bell made to sound like an analog bell. There it is. And what's first in the list today?
Let's see, what are we going to talk about?
Is it the overall Chevy direction, the overall direction that that the Chevrolet brand is going in?
Yeah, I think that's great. Yep.
What's your reel us in?
Well, you know, now that GM is, you know, has wiped the slate clean, so to speak, it's really their opportunity to reestablish what they want their brands to be. So, you know, we've talked in the past about Cadillac, and we've talked on our weekly shows about Buick. Mm-hmm. Touched a little bit about GMC with that Granite concept.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the most important brand out there for General Motors in North America, for sure, is Chevrolet.
Mm-hmm.
And we never really looked at its approach after all the bankruptcy. I thought it was a good opportunity to really take a look and see what Chevrolet is going to be is offering now, but is going to be offering in the next year or two.
Okay. What's obviously we have the Cruze. That's the most I'd say the model that's the most anticipated right now, besides the Volt, obviously.
Yeah.
We have those two, which share some platform bits here and there. And besides that, though, we have the Aveo that's coming. They're completely redesigned, which, in my opinion, is stunning if it ever actually looks that way in production form.
Yeah.
And then we have, let's see, the Orlando. I think that's another one that's more or less we saw it in concept form but have never really seen it in production guise.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, what else?
And the Spark. There?
And the Spark, that's right. And the Spark, there's been some talk about it not coming to the U.S., but it looks like finally GM has decided that it will come to the U.S. I think they let us know this late last year that the Spark will be available in the United States, and even though it may not even wear the Spark name, that will be interesting to see. But I think besides those, what is it, 3, 4, 5 models, you know, we've known about them for some time already. What else is there? What else?
Well, it's really what else in terms of cars is the models that, you know, most of us are familiar with now, the Impala, the Malibu, and the Camaro.
Right.
And you know, all three of them are pretty successful. in today's challenging market. And despite the fact that you know, in on a world stage, they're fairly large cars. And you know, Impala is a, you know, it's a pretty dated model now, and it's still selling like crazy.
That isn't that interesting. It's the, I guess the going the going thought pattern is, if you update a car and you make it great and you make it awesome and brand new and with the latest technologies and shoehorn the latest direct injection turbocharged twin turbo four-cylinder engine in there, I think that was a pretty good amalgamation of all things that you can, all the buzzwords you can throw in, into an engine.
Yeah, and it's probably coming too.
Yeah, so if isn't that's kind of the mindset? If you update it and make it look great, it will sell. But then we have something like the Impala, and it is selling, and it's selling very well. Although
better than the Camaro, I think.
I think so. I think so. It's got about 3,000 more units a month it moves than the Camaro.
Yep.
So it's, to me, that's amazing how an aging model. I mean, you get into that thing and you can kind of, you can tell that it's old.
Yep.
How is it selling? How is it still, it's still kicking? It's not just, you know, it's not like it's just on its last legs. It's selling.
Yep.
How is it possible?
Well, I think when, you know, the one thing that Chevrolet wants to get back at is to be able to deliver value for your dollars. And when you shop for a vehicle of that size, it's a really good, well-priced vehicle. And, you know, a lot of people want as large as you can get, but, you know, still be relatively economical and have a high dependability level or reliability level. So to that, the Impala is just shining. So even though it is a little dated, it's a moneymaker for General Motors for sure.
And actually, I've just pulled up the
everything's,
numbers. It's moving just in March. We just had the figures out today. We're recording this on April 1st. And the Impala moved almost just 15,594 units. And the Camaro sold 8,904, so almost 9,000. So it's outselling it, the Camaro, by 6,000 entire models. Copies. That's great.
Yeah, and you know, this is a platform that has paid for itself a long time ago.
A decade ago.
So you know, it's pure gravy, every car, every one of those that they sell. So
good.
It is a key vehicle, and even though it is dated, it is an important vehicle to Chevrolet. You know, gone are the days where you can build this big boat and you don't have to worry about, you know, the competition because everybody's going to buy this car anyways. Well, you know, Chevrolet, I think with the Impala, it's a little bland, but it reaches the right market.
Right. Maybe that's what the market wants. That target market. Maybe that's what they prefer.
Yeah, and you know, I'm the type of guy when I'm driving down the road, I am constantly looking at, you know, gaps in the bodies of the vehicles in front of me, beside me, and you know, looking at the size of the, you know, the space between the doors and the quarters and stuff like that. And I can tell you, even the Impala, even though it's a dated body, the GM has still spent some time to even clean it up as they go along. So if you took a look at one of the new Impalas and compared it to, say, the old body styles, where, you know, it's basically the same body style, but it had a front and rear refreshing, you know, the one with the four Corvette type round taillights.
Yep. I actually, we had that one as a rental car for about 3 months when we were in playing hockey in Minnesota. So I know exactly which one you mean.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the, you know, I mean, this car's still built at the Oshawa plant where the Camaro is, and you know they've been constantly refining the car and make it in even a higher quality. So it's not something that Chevrolet is just saying, okay, well, you know, let's just
milk
pump
the
it out
cow,
there.
Right? Milk it for all it's worth. They're actually okay, good. So the thing is that, you know, on one hand, I think you have something like the Impala, which is, to me, it's a very soft, very, very smooth ride. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, you have something more in lines of the new Ford Taurus, which is, mm-hmm. it's a lot more sharp from a looks perspective, from a design aesthetic perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, it drives like a more along the lines of a European car, mm-hmm. rather than than an American kind of plush box. And I think that's interesting to kind of notice these two differing approaches. And I don't know if you'd call Chevy's approach an approach or a strategy, because it's, you know, it's just, it's an old car, and whatever the replacement will be, we'll see what happens then. But I just thought I'd point that out and see how different and completely kind of different mentalities that the Chevy's approach compared to Ford's.
Well, I think if you look at General Motors' product line in North America as a whole, you're going to find that their vehicles are going to ride more. They're going to be more European inspired with respect to ride and suspension.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that doesn't mean that they should, you know, necessarily disregard the folks who like to drive the couches on wheels, and you know, which were quite prevalent in the early 80s, you know. You know, something for everybody. You know, there's a lot of people that are saying, well, you know, I was talking to a few people today about the Buick and Cadillac, and you know, when the numbers came out, we were discussing what they looked like and how they compare to, you know, Lexus and BMW. And some people were saying, you know, why does, you know, General Motors have, you know, Cadillac and Buick when they're both competing against each other? And it's not quite that way. Like, if you're going to say, lump it all together and say a luxury car is a luxury car, then you might as well say, well, a sports car is a sports car, and a Econobox is an Econobox. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there within those things, there are niches,
mm-hmm.
and profitable niches. And so I think, you know, having the Impala the way it is currently, it's, you know, it's making them killer money. It's selling like crazy. It's one of their most popular vehicles right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't come from, you know, cop cars and taxi cabs. I mean, it's more than just that. So, you know, and this is, you know, a front wheel drive car, six cylinder car. So, you know, I would say if it's still selling, you can't say, okay, we're just not going to build a car like that anymore. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, where they go with the next version of the Impala, because, you know, it's kind of like, they're pickup trucks. When you redesign a pickup truck for General Motors, there's a lot of risk there, and you better get it right, mm-hmm. because you're selling, you know, one time they were selling 1 million pickup trucks a year, and you don't want to lose that market share. So it's the same thing, you know, with respect to the Impala. Like you said, they, you know, they sold 13,000
and
15,000 this month or last month. And, you know, do you want to redesign it so that, yeah, it drives like a European car, but now you only sell 10,000 a month, and now you've got all this R&D and development costs that you have to incur on top of that? Well, you know, is that a good decision?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. By the way, the current 2010 Impala front bench seat, good old front bench seat. Still there.
Yeah. So,
although,
you know, I don't.
You could get it without it, by the way. I'm looking at the other picture now. You can, I guess there's an option to get it without it.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe, you know, through General Motors research and stuff like that, when they're really getting to know their customers, maybe it is a very older demographics buying the Impala and the folks who grew up on the cushy suspensions, and they, you know, the Impala is one of the last to still feel that way, you know.
You know what they could do is if they decided to, you know, if they ever decided to re-engineer the Impala or whatever the Impala replacement may be called, if it ever, maybe you could change their name, it could get a name change. But what they could do is they could still serve both markets, kind of the people who are looking for that old school plushy ride, you know, the couch on wheels ride, and also serve the people who are looking for a little bit more European experiences. They could have the Impala Classic remain as the current Impala, and then have the new Impala just be the Impala. I think they did that, didn't they?
Well, you know what, there was
Classic.
Yeah, you're right. It was a Malibu Classic, but there is opportunity there. I mean, you know, they had the Impala SS, which was you know, tighter spring rate, bigger wheels, and a more taut suspension. But it's still, you know, at the end of the day, you're still riding on an old platform. So, you know, you can only do so much on those things.
Right.
But, you know, certainly they can do the opposite, where they can, like you say, reverse engineer a really good platform, and so that you can make the ride soft. But for those who want a more European feel, you know, you can put the suspension, which they most likely already have sitting around in a Holden or sitting around in a Vauxhall or Opel somewhere, and throw that in, so that, you know, the younger generation would be more likely to buy that. Because, you know, I think with respect to when you're looking at Buick, you know, they're certainly going after younger demographics. You know, they're saying, you know, okay, well, you know, all you blue hairs, you know, we love you, but, you know, we have to start looking at bringing people in their 30s, and hopefully they'll stay with us right through till they're 70 or 80 or whatever.
Right.
So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they do with the next version of the Impala, if they're going to take that same road. But, you know, I think General Motors probably has enough product out there to satisfy those with, you know, who enjoy the European type feel, and still be able to offer, you know, more of the couch on wheels sort of concept for the older folks.
Yeah,
maybe you're right. You know, come up with some way that you can offer, you know, both feels to, you know, the consumer.
Mm-hmm. I think that would if you actually have. And I don't know whether it's true. Maybe it's just, you know, you and me who are just assuming this. I'm not sure that the younger generation, you know, 30s or people in their 40s, whether they actually are looking for something a little bit more springier. Maybe they are looking for the couch and wheels experience in a big car. If they are out in the market for a large sedan, I just don't know. You know, I look at someone like I have a few neighbors who fit that age demographic perfectly, and some of them have Porsches, and they swear and live by them, and they say they'll never go back to driving anything else. And then others, they have something like an Avalon, which is, in my opinion, very, very close to in driving experience to the Impala.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not in size, but I think the Avalon is about 8 inches shorter or so than than the Impala. But, you know, from a driving perspective, so I think it's interesting to figure out, you know, to see what kind of data does GM and does Chevy really have on Impala buyers, and even those who didn't buy an Impala but looked at it, and to see what exactly they're looking for. That would be very interesting from my point of view.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, I'm just thinking, let's assume they did cushion it up the next generation. Well, what do you do with the customer who wants that European feel? Well, I mean, I think you can go to Buick, certainly with the Regal coming out, and, you know, the LaCrosse is a fantastic product. And then you can, you know, you can go to the Malibu. Sure, it's going to be a little bit smaller than the Impala, And then there's, you know, the Volta, the Cruze, you know. They are smaller cars by our standards, but in Europe they'd be more of a larger type of vehicle. So
Yeah.
they're giving the customer selection, you
Yeah.
know, even if they do decide to cushion up the Impala.
And the funny part is you mentioned Europe, and something like the Malibu isn't even available in Europe. You know, you have something like the Cruze is the biggest class, the biggest vehicle that Chevy offers sometimes in certain European countries.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm pretty excited about. Well, I'm excited about all the stuff that Chevy's going to be coming to market here. You know, they're all smaller stuff. It's all smaller vehicles. But a lot of it has already been tested in Europe, and I think we have to start focusing on the fact that gasoline is going to be more expensive in 10 years from now. I think $5 a gallon would seem like a steal, and so we have to start thinking about what can we drive that still looks great, can still you know, get five people in it, and gets, you know, absolutely fantastic gas mileage. And I think the Cruze is one of those, certainly a solution. I know today we posted up that video about the Cruze, and that's something that people should log on to the site to take a look at, because you can really get a good sense about how excited the workers at it's the Lordstown plant, right?
Yeah, it is Ohio.
Yeah. You know, how excited they are about building the Cruze. I mean, there's a genuine excitement there about building a good quality car that seems to have a. There's a lot of people out there waiting for this car. They want to see it, they want to drive it, they want to try it. You know, I think it's going to be a very, very popular car. And it's going to be something that I think America is going to hopefully fall in love with.
Absolutely. We can even play that video if you like.
Sure.
I got it's about 1 minute and 30 seconds long. Let me hit the play button here.
Okay.
I don't think people understand the luxury aspect of the car without the luxury price. I mean, it is a very, very sharp vehicle.
We had one down in the trim shop last week. We had people coming up from all over, you know, getting in the car, sitting down, you know, playing with the knobs and buttons. And they were really excited about this car. They really wanted to come. They really want us to start producing it. I got to drive it. We got out on the open road, and like I said, it's got some power.
That's the one of the factory workers there.
Real smooth handling, nice smooth ride. Not a lot of noise.
Everyone just wants to just be a part of this. The interiors are great on this Cruze. We have a mix of cocoa and tan. And whenever we build the validation on these Cruzes, people are just looking like, oh my goodness, is this really gonna be a color combination? And I'm like, absolutely. It's got the leather seats and it's a gorgeous looking interiors, and that's what's catching everyone's eye. My boyfriend and I went out to dinner last week and just kind of talking to a couple, and we told them where we worked, what we did, and they had heard about the Cruze but didn't know anything about it. And by talking to them, I think I sold my first Cruze.
There's that.
Yeah.
That's a great video. By the way, I love these videos that Chevy's starting to put out. They're little, you know, very short, very to the point, but it gets this kind of viral excitement going, which, you know, we reposted obviously because you know, we're GM Authority and we cover General Motors news and everything to do with General Motors we cover. If Bob Lutz sneezes, we'll cover it, but or Ed Whitaker for that matter. But the
Yeah.
You know, it's great to see, you know, it kind of gives you an inside look into the company they interview all the voices that you heard, if the listeners haven't watched the video, it's basically they have the Lordstown plant employees, you know, talking about the crews. They're building them right now as we speak. They have three shifts going at the Lordstown plant, and it gives you an inside look into a company that's seen as, you know, from one point of view, it's a behemoth and it's a big conglomerate and a big giant. And this kind of brings it down to a personal level and says, you know what? Well, these are the faces of the people that bring these products to you. And they're built right here in America, you know, to somebody that's right next door to you. And that's great.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, isn't it, you know, we appreciate listening to the actual people who work on these vehicles telling us about the vehicles rather than some paid actor or actress or, sorry to say, but ex-football player.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know? It's, you know, and not only, see, these, you can say that these people have a vested interest in it, sure, but the problem is, with saying that is, you know, these people, they put together the nuts and bolts that make these vehicles and put these vehicles into our driveway. And mm-hmm. for that kind of, you just don't get that anywhere else. When is the last time that you actually spoke to someone who made a product that you have in your home or in your, you know, let alone in your car? That's,
yeah.
You know, maybe this is not the same as speaking, but if you can see them, you can see the plant, you can see the cruises being assembled. By the way, if you watch this video, unless you've been to a car plant before and have seen all this stuff come together, it's just, some of this stuff is amazing. You can see some of it in the video, so I highly recommend you mm-hmm. watch it. But it's great. It's great. It's a very great effort by GM. And
yeah, and you know, it's you really gotta, when the marketing group is looking at how to reach the public, you really got to step back a second and say, well, you know, how can we reach the public, but at the same time motivate the workforce that we have? And I think this is a perfect way to marry the two, because the worker now feels a sense of pride. Mm-hmm. And they feel that they're important to the organization. Mm-hmm. They feel that you know, they're not being ignored, and they're being valued for the knowledge that they have about the product. And there's really no better people to talk about the product than them. If you're always expecting somebody to build you something, and it doesn't have to be a car, but you never go to them and ask them about it. You never go to them and or refer other people to these people. Instead, you keep them away from all the action, or when the big wigs walk around, so to speak, and you're told, as the workers told, oh, don't say anything. Don't look at the person. Just keep doing your job. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really, you know, belittling and demeaning.
Yeah.
And you're going to go away feeling like, you know, you're not treated very well, and you're going to go home after a shift and really not necessarily feel good about your job. But if you know, the organization is coming to you to do a commercial, or the new program where a lot of the engineers and designers are getting to, yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know what? It's going to work numbers, not only for getting the message out there, but for this person feeling great about working at GM.
That's a great point.
Get in that car and go back to work and feel that much more motivated and want to get there and build the best car in the world.
That's a great point that you bring up, actually. I didn't even think of that myself, but you're right. The ability to, not only is a good kind of a public outreach program, or, I don't know, some may consider it even free advertising, but you also have, you're right, the workers, the morale, the involvement, that's got to go a long way for them to be on camera, go on the video. And, you know, this video right now has, let me take a look. It's got somewhere around 11,000 something, just over 11,000 views right now.
Yeah, and I don't even think it's a week old.
No, it's less than a week old, exactly.
Yeah, so, you know, when this product, when the cruise actually gets out to market, you know, then people will start to take interest. Most of, you know, our listeners and our readers are all enthusiasts and probably know more about Chevrolet than or General Motors than 99.9% of the market. So they know what's coming. They understand about the platforms and the products that's being offered. Mm-hmm. Now, just talking about motivating the plant worker. I never really told you this, but every year I hold a buyer and builder meet and greet at the Oshawa plant.
Oh.
And what I do is basically bring buyers and assembly workers together for a little party, so to speak. And, you know, it's a way for Chevrolet customers to actually thank the workers for building the vehicles that make them so happy. And yes, it started with the Camaro buyers, but we're going to slowly reach out to all vehicles that are built in Oshawa, namely the Impala, the upcoming Regal, the Equinox moving over there partially, and the upcoming Cadillac XTS. Mm-hmm. And the point is that, you know, we want to be able to give the GM worker a sense of pride and to let them know that the people out there truly appreciate the hard work and good work that they've done for them. Because, you know, you can still say that, okay, well, I paid my money. But I can tell you that, you know, people are so happy with this new Camaro. It's, you know, a lot of them, it's really changed their lives. I mean, it's really made them happy in a time of challenge in some families. I mean, I can tell you just horror stories. And this car is their one peace of mind. And it's just truly changed their life so much that they actually will drive 12 hours to come up to Oshawa to meet the workers.
Absolutely. And you know, the other thing that it's great to do that from the worker's perspective. And yeah, you're right. It's not just about, you know, here's my check and give me my car. It's, you know, you want to talk about building a relationship. Well, yeah, some customers may not even care to, you know, drive out there or think about any of that stuff. But then there are those who actually, they care deeply about who built their car, you know, where it was built, how it was built, and that's an excellent way. And you never told me this, but that's, now that you mentioned it, that's another excellent way to motivate and to engage and to bring together the community. You know, and you know what's interesting is that some of the workers who work there probably actually also drive what they make as well. You know, so it's not like they just build this thing and that's it. It's, you can share stories about these cars. It's an excellent environment. I can bet, and I'd love to come out to one of those myself one day and see how.
August 20th this year. Come on up.
August.
I'm gonna try and get Manoli up here.
See, Manoli can swim across the river, and he'll be right there.
Exactly. Yeah, and you know, and the other thing too is, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, you read it. I mean, you know, somebody from the factory or GM, you know, put something in the plant newspaper and says, oh, you know, here's a letter from a customer. But, you know, and there's merit there.
Right.
But, you know, compare that to somebody who comes out, you know, gets his hand shaken by 50 to 100 people to thank them. You know, guys coming up from Kansas and Texas and Louisiana and Florida and Georgia, you know, I think we have one one person coming from California this year.
Wow.
Just to shake their hands and thank them for building this vehicle. And, you know, it's when you look at it, when you take a step back and look at the process, you know, in the past we had General Motors, and the same applies to any car manufacturer. You had General Motors and its relationship with its customers, and then you had General Motors and its relationship with its employees. But we never really had the relationship between the employees and the customers, and that's what we're trying to establish, because in the center of that triangle, that relationship triangle, is the product. And if you can get all three groups working together and sharing ideas and learning about each other and understanding how this product is used or appreciated, or just generally driven, you're gonna actually create a better product at the end. So it benefits everybody.
Absolutely.
It benefits the customer, the GM customer. It benefits GM because they're going to build a better product. They're going to sell more cars. Mm-hmm. It benefits the employees because they're going to sell more cars. There's more jobs. So it's a win-win-win all the way around. And so hopefully, you know, we can take this concept and move it to other GM plants across North America. So, you know, we have big plans for this going forward. Because I think, you know, it last year, the workers were absolutely blown away. They were shocked, that
I bet
that people would drive up here just to shake their hand.
Is there any chance of getting, some of the engineers from GM corporate to come up there and also kind of, you know, get them over there? Is that in the cards?
Well, I mean, I certainly could do it, mm-hmm. but right now the focus is with the actual union members.
Okay.
And hopefully, you know, I can get General Motors full support on it. The designers, the engineers, they get opportunity to actually speak to the public quite often. There's, you know, whether it's the North American International Auto Show, or whether it's, for example, there's with the Camaro, they have a program where a certain group of enthusiasts, well-known Camaro enthusiasts, regularly meet with the entire product team and share the information that they've gathered from, you know, the entire enthusiast community about what they want to see in the product. And now they're going back to Detroit, and they're from all over North America, and they're going back to Detroit in late August to discuss, you know, now that people have had these vehicles in their hands, they're going back to discuss the things that they like and they don't like.
Okay.
So there is that relationship where certainly with the Camaro, and I think it's really paying dividends. But I don't know if, you know, how thorough the program is with the other General Motors products.
Right. It will be interesting to see how, you know, maybe, and obviously I think it was Sang-Yup Lee, is that his name, who's the exterior designer?
Yeah.
Maybe now that he's over at Volkswagen and Audi, maybe he could make the drive down one day and shake everybody's hand and say, "Hey, look at this beautiful body I carved out of clay at first, and now look at
yeah.
it's the best selling pony car in the world."
Yeah, and you know, it just today, I guess, it was announced that it received the world design.
Yeah, what was it called? It's the world design something here. It's World Car Design of the Year Award.
Exactly. So for I think his name's Sang-Yup.
Yeah, Sang-Yup Lee.
Sang-Yup. Yeah. You know, he could not ask for a better stamp of approval for his work.
Absolutely. It's a work of art, and you know, we don't need to tell any of our listeners how beautiful the Fission Camaro is, but they know.
Yeah, and you know, to me it's proof that and I hope GM management realizes this, that it's proof that General Motors can design come out with a very unique design that looks like nothing out there now, and sell like hotcakes, and let the designers do their thing. Yep. You know, don't hold them back. If somebody's like 18-year-old designer has some kind of idea, you know, and he's a co-op student or whatever, let him go. And if he has something unique, don't discount it just because he's a young kid. You know, I think in the past, General Motors was a very progressive. It was very progressive in nature with respect to, the position you held within the company. You start off as sweeping floors and work your way up, so to speak. And that isn't necessarily the best approach to design. You know, you don't need some guy who's been doing it for 30 years to come out with the next latest and greatest design. It doesn't work like that.
Right.
You know, that guy, after he's been, he's designed something, move him out of design to something else that can be challenging for the guy, and let somebody new, let him have at her.
Right.
I think really the unique designs of the future are coming out of General Motors from the younger generation in there. So, and this is one thing that sort of concerns me, is that, we've seen, and, we've written about it quite a bit on our site. We've seen some fantastic designs coming out of the Cadillac Design Studio, two products in particular, the Converge and the Cadillac 16, get shelved because for whatever reason, and in their replacement, they've got good products.
Right.
I mean, the XTC that got the green light is a nice car, and the ATS, apparently within the walls of GM, it's being called the BMW killer.
Right.
So that's a mouthful to say that.
Yeah.
And especially when, it's been well covered up, and especially when we've seen what the Converge looks like, and our site grafted an extra two doors on the back to take a look and see what the Converge would look like as a four-door, three-series Bimmer Fighter with a, Ecotec 4 or 3.8 on in it or something like that.
Right.
We just love that design. So, I personally would have loved to see that go head-to-head with the three-series BMW. But if you're going to, if you're going to say that you got a BMW killer with the new upcoming ATS, well, first, it's got to look better than that Converge.
Right. And
so,
the thing is, the BMW, the 3 Series is that they're gunning after, it is, the current generation at least, is not that hard to beat. I mean, it may drive very well, but it is by no means an attractive car. It's not horrible. It doesn't, it's not, how should I put this? It's not offensive, but neither is it, at least to me. This is obviously from a personal opinion standpoint, but I don't think it's that hard to beat the 3 Series in terms of styling. The 3 Series sedan, the coupe is a little better. Cars like the Lexus has been trying to get into this compact sedan game for forever, it seems, for ever since the first generation IS came out, which was for all intents and purposes a flop for them. And now look at them. Mm-hmm. They're neck and neck with the 3 Series with their current generation IS. And, you know, so what I think that the car to beat in this segment is, yeah, 3 Series, you know, that's kind of the car that everybody is focusing on. But they also need to look at start looking at the Lexus IS. I'm sure they are. I mean, I hope they are. I don't have any information to prove that they are. But the Lexus IS, the Audi A4, and the Mercedes-Benz C-Class, those are all very, very, you know, established and very capable competitors, not only in terms of performance, but in terms of styling. Every single one of those has been refreshed in the last 3 or 4 years, and they're very current, very, very appealing. And like I said, I think the 3 Series is the least attractive car out of that whole class. So hopefully they're not just gunning to beat the 3 Series and then, you know, they release something that's doesn't really look that hot, and then all of a sudden the new 3 Series comes out and it kind of turns them over and says, hey, well, we beat you there.
Yeah.
So hopefully that
will be the case. I'm really looking forward to seeing them pull the covers off that ATS because that car has a lot of work to do.
Yeah, and our tipsters, by the way, were wrong. They told us that we would see it at New York, and it turns out that the Cadillac that we were going to see at New York is the CTS-V Sportwagon.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully it's not New York, but we'll see whenever it gets revealed. It probably will come over as a concept, but yeah, you know, you talk about styling, and you know, I've had a lot of conversations about this with a lot of my car friends and car enthusiast buddies, and every single one of them says, well, hey, what's styling? You need to have so much more than styling to make a car sell and to make a car successful and to make a car appealing. Well, I said, you know, if you need so much more than styling, let's look at the current Camaro, you know, and the Camaro, the fifth gen, it is so stunning. It's so gorgeous that, you know, you kind of, once you look at it and you fall in love with it, the other stuff, you know, whatever other deficiencies it may have, you can overlook it, overlook all of them just for its exterior styling. You know, you can overlook the hard touch plastics in the dash. You can overlook the, you know, whatever kind of subpar, you know, it depends on your opinion, but the audio system they may have. You can overlook all of that. And, you know, just take a look at the Ford Mustang and see that the Camaro has been beating the Mustang every single month since the Camaro's inception. And why is that? You know, the Mustang has a better interior. For this model year, it has a better engine lineup. You know, but for some reason, the Camaro is outselling it. Well, I'd like to wager a bet that it's because of the exterior styling. That's the thing that catches people's attention. You know, people don't get caught on the power plants. They don't get caught on the interiors. They don't see that as they're driving by and they're being passed on the highway by the Camaro or the Mustang. What they see is the shell. They see the outside. They see the exterior, and they say, "Wow, that is gorgeous."
Yeah.
And that's what.
Yeah, and you know what? I think a perfect example of a company who, you know, put some effort into exterior design, but then, you know, afterwards, you know, the design and of the interior and the engine and that sort of thing was an afterthought is Chrysler. You know, they, you know, like the Challenger, for example. I mean, they did a pretty good job on the outside of the Challenger, but the interior is, you know, they went to the parts bin for that. Even when you look at what was the small little 4-cylinder Plymouth? It had that, you know, 1930s like.
Was it the Dodge or was it a Plymouth?
It's Plymouth.
I don't know.
I was off a neon plat. Same.
Oh,
had the neon underpinnings.
Okay, I know what you're talking about. I don't know the name. It's the. I'll look it up. Keep going though.
Yeah, but you know it's the same thing. And you know it had a really striking outside, but then, You know, I actually drove one, and it's like, you know, this is junk. Mm-hmm. I mean, the interior was lousy. The powertrain was lousy. The suspension was lousy. But, you know, the outside of the car looked pretty neat.
Right.
And so, you know, a car can fall down. But like you said, the first thing that catches a person's interest is its external design. So, you know, and really we're not doing anything different from when we pick our mates. You know, the Right. first thing we're going to look at is what they look like on the outside. And if that interests us, then we're going to try and find out what's on the inside.
Exactly.
And it's the same thing with vehicles.
That's a great analogy.
So it is. It's just a human condition that we all subconsciously treat things. You know, even, you know, your taste is different from my taste, but, you know, even in what kind of house you want to buy. Well, the outside of a house is important, but then when you go shopping for homes and you know, you find the outside looks great, then you go on the inside and you're all disappointed. You know, it's got, you know, the wrong flooring, the wrong cabinetry, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's the same thing with vehicles. So the first thing is you got to attract the person to want to come over and get in the car and go for a ride. Mm-hmm. And based on that, I think, like, with the new small cars Chevrolet's coming out with, they did a good job there. Like the Aveo or Aveo RS and the Chevrolet Cruze and the Spark, or yet to be named Spark, mm-hmm. All have some interesting external design work to them. They are interesting. They're interesting to look at. They are more than just econo boxes to get from A to B. Mm-hmm. You know, so if they can take that styling and combine that with quality and appropriate performance, whether it's gas mileage or throttle response to the current demands of the market, then, you know, you got something good going. But, you know, I think the days of, you know, just coming out with a Trabi or a Volkswagen because people just need to get from A to B, and as long as you provide it, they'll come, are over. People they have a specific, you know, they want something that's attractive.
Right. And you know, if whatever GM or Chevrolet did with the Camaro is, you know, it's working. So maybe they need to look at that and say, you know, let's kind of try and apply that. Whatever we did there, let's try and carry that over to other models, whether it's as an entire design approach from a penning, you know, a design standpoint, or whether it's just an entire approach to building and designing that one particular vehicle. They need to, you know, if it's working, they can look at it and carry that process over to, you know, other vehicles. Maybe something like the next generation Malibu.
Yeah. Well, I you know, I think it's important to show the family resemblance, you know, in some way with a particular brand. I think, you know, every car manufacturer should be doing that.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and certainly the Germans have always been doing that. Mm-hmm. But, and, you know, Chevrolet now, like, pretty much everything has the split grille with the bow tie in the middle, mm-hmm. except for the Camaro and the Corvette, you know, the sports cars.
Right.
So there is that connection going on. But I think with however they decided to give free rein to Sanji when he built this vehicle, they should be doing that with every designer. And clearly they have been. When you look at some of the concept vehicles, even, you know, the Buicks. I mean, I just love the look of the LaCrosse. You know, I really like the Regal. Even the I don't know if you ever saw the concept Riviera that was shown
not
in China.
But in pictures.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yep.
You know, so, you know, they've been given these guys free rein, but there is this disconnect going on between what these guys are coming out with, given free rein, and what we're being able to buy. Now, and in particular, I'm looking at Cadillac. Now, the nice thing, getting back to the Camaro, for example, is if you take a look at that, my Camaro, it's silver, and you put that next to the concept Camaro, the original silver concept Camaro, you know, and I think GM actually has a couple of pictures out there where the production version is parked next to the concept one, and you know, one's 3 years older than the other. You know, they build these concept vehicles, not necessarily thinking about safety constraints you know, possibilities in terms of the things which would make the production of such a vehicle difficult. Mm-hmm. They just go ahead and build something they think is nice, you know, looks
right,
nice.
Right.
And then when it comes time to build it, well, they have to move some things around in order to be able to sell it. And with the Camaro, though, they still had to do that. The original car had no B pillar, for example, and so that conceptually, you know, it was like the first generation, like the 67 to 69 Camaro, where you can roll down the back window, you can roll down your side window, and then there's this big one big open, you know, hole to let the air in and stuff like that. But in reality, that compromised the integrity or the strength of the body. So what they did is they put a B pillar. So it's a hidden B pillar. So when you see the car from the outside, it still looks like it's that, you know, clean glass right across the back, and it looks like you can still roll down the rear window, but you can't.
Right.
And when you see this car next to the original concept car, the dimensions look very, very similar, and I've never seen another you know, concept car from GM that looked so so much like the original or the actual production intent car the production car that looks so much like the original concept vehicle. So I think they need to be able to trust their designers, mm-hmm. and work with them to try and bring those really neat designs to production.
Yep.
You know, I don't know what the reason was for Cadillac saying we're not going with the 16. I don't know why they didn't.
The response to that was very good, I think. It was very positive when it came out, when it debuted.
Everybody loved it. Yep. I mean, I didn't hear one person that said, oh, that's ugly. Or everybody said, now that's what Cadillac needs.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was, you know, that car makes a statement,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And the, you know, we have a post about this, and you wrote it a couple of months ago, probably, I think. But it's one thing to have something like the 16 come out as a concept. And, you know, a lot of times the concepts are used as, you know, they're kind of design aesthetic type, you know, just to pen the overall direction of either one single vehicle or an entire range or entire lineup of vehicles or an entire brand. But I you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but the 16, you know, as beautiful as it was, what did it bring? You know, what styling elements did it bring to the current Cadillac lineup? You know, to the CTS or to the XTS that's going to be built, you know, it was confirmed actually this past week. What did the 16 bring? I don't think it brought much, if anything.
Well, you know, you're exactly right, but you know, I've written about that car and Cadillac, and you know, what I look for is, you know, when the top dog luxury vehicle comes out, that the little smaller, or mama bear and baby bear, follow suit in the design afterwards. So, you know, and we've seen BMW and Mercedes-Benz do this. Mm-hmm. You know, they come out with a certain look especially BMW, you know, the 7 Series. And then the next year or two, the 5 Series has, you know, that type of look. And then the 3 Series has that type of look. And then the 7 Series changes over and it moves down again.
Right.
And so, you know, this could have been something which Cadillac could have considered. You know, yeah, the front of it, the wheelbase, the driver positioning, which was dead center in between both wheels, the short trunk overhang, the long hood, you know, it wasn't, it certainly had no real similarities to the CTS, for example. However, you know, they could have designed it in there. There were some things in there that really could have made the familiar connection. Right. For example, all Cadillacs now are going to, you know, the rear taillight's going to a very thin
vertical
slit, you know, and it's, you know, to the point of being extremely elegant, you know, rather than, you know, the original purpose is, you know, parking lights and signal lights and brake lights. But you know, it had that which it shared with the CTS, and I'm, you know, the Converge had that as well, and also in the front the Cadillacs are going to that more, certainly the driving lights or the parking lights, you know, have that little thin, elegant sort of strip. Coming down the front. And you know, the 16 had that as well. So, you know, if their intent is to have the consumer recognize a Cadillac coming down the road, you know, from 100 feet away, or, you know, going by you, immediately recognize that as a Cadillac based on those attributes, then, you know, they certainly could have came out with the 16 and people would have that recognition.
Right. Maybe the, and I think we may have mentioned this on the show where we talked about, and we went into this into more detail, but maybe what the reason that the XTS is what it is right now, and you're right, some of the design elements for the Cadillac brand in general have actually, they have carried over, you know, like you said, the vertical lights, you know, the kind of the whole art and science design aesthetic, the sharp angles and the thin lights at the front and the back, and the some of those design elements, for example, the bold grills, some of those things, they've carried over, and you can see those on the CTS and on the XTS, and even on the SRX. But the thing that really is, to me, is interesting, I would love to have been the fly on the wall in some of those meetings that took place, you know, that made the decision not to build the 16 and then to build the XTS. It's maybe they didn't have enough funds and they didn't have enough development resources when they made the decision for the XTS.
Well, I mean, yeah, well, you know, they're always, you're always going to face those pressures, but I think as a organization, especially with Cadillac, you know, I think one of GM's paths to success again is to step back and take a look at what the William Durants of the world and the Alfred P. Sloans did in the early days, and you know, and find out exactly what were these brands to people. What was Cadillac to the American public? Well, it was, you know, it was a sign that you made it. So today, do we want to reestablish that? I would want, I expect GM to reestablish themselves as, you know, I would settle for nothing less than to ensure that Cadillac is the sign of success again in America. And if you have a Cadillac in the driveway, it means you made it. Well, if GM thinks that...
Worldwide, too.
Oh, I would love that. Now, if GM thinks that, you know, if somebody from GM is going to tell me what it is, I'm going to laugh in their face.
Yeah.
Because they're really not dealing with reality.
No,
it's just not there.
There's a reason why, for example, Mercedes-Benz and Lexus both sold 20,000 vehicles in the month of March, and Cadillac sold less than 12,000. You know, there's a reason why Mercedes, actually, you can even lump BMW in there, why all those are selling in the 20,000 range, and they outsell Cadillac by 100% month, every single month. There's a reason why that is. And
so how many Cadillacs were sold all together last month?
They sold, let me take a look, Cadillac, 11,639, so 11,600.
Okay, and how many old, dated Impalas were sold last month?
Uh-huh. So right about 15,000. So
exactly.
One model.
So my point is, you know, you're not getting it done, you know? And it's not good enough to be beat by not only an old, dated model, but by the competition. Right. It's not good enough to have a brand that is the ultimate brand within your organization be getting its ass kicked out there in its market segment.
Right.
You know, you have to really go back and establish Cadillac to what it was back in the day. Mm-hmm. And and that requires a commitment by the company to invest billions of dollars into Cadillac. And if, you know, the designers and you know, Kurt McNeil had that level of commitment by the organization, then they could offer the products that would allow Cadillac to go back to, you know, being number one in the minds of all of us.
Right, exactly. And as long as we're talking about numbers, by the way, what do you think of Audi just in general? What do you think they're a little bit, you know, they've come a long way since the you know, the last decade or so?
Yes, and you know what? Audi's going to teach everybody at General Motors a very, very valuable lesson. And that is that if you have a car that is accused of runaway acceleration, has crappy reliability, was on 60 Minutes being slammed about with an interview about how certain families killed their kids from sudden acceleration, to the point where it is today, don't think for a second that Toyota's not going to be in the same place someday.
Right.
It's going to happen.
Right.
And you know what? In the 80s, you know, there was a time where, you know, Audis were out there. And they were that European, oh, there's one of those European cars that, you know, that looks all right. And the drive was, you know, it was okay.
Right.
But, you know, they always had mediocre reliability. But they got slaughtered.
Still do. Still do, by the way.
Yeah. Well, you know, I used to joke around and say, don't buy an Audi unless it's the Audi card's still valid, you know, because you pay through the teeth.
Right.
But the thing is, now where they are today, they're in a place where people are going to look at them. I mean, when I see them on the road, I look at them. I mean, for one thing, you know, they've used lighting in the daytime running lights.
Absolutely, yep.
And they've used them in such a manner that it allows the eye to just go there and look at that vehicle coming down the road.
It's beautiful.
It is, and you know, it has. They all have really nice lines. You know, the A4, S4, S5. I mean, you know, that's a pretty decent car. I mean, you know, that's a pretty nice car, but it's going to, you know, that car is going to, right now, it's people are starting to look at that car, and it's going to increase sales in the next couple of years, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, the reason I brought them up is because I've personally, just like you, I think they've been doing a great job on a way to, you know, increasing sales and really becoming that status symbol of a brand the way we prefer Cadillac to be. and mm-hmm. you know, the same position that's right now occupied by, you know, whatever, Mercedes, BMW, or Lexus. But hey, Cadillac outsold them in the month of March. Let's see, that Audi only sold 8,500 units. They only moved 8,589 units, and then Cadillacs went and did about 12,000. So, and I think actually Cadillac has even less models than Audi does. So, I don't want to make it sound like we're bashing Cadillac to the point where they're doing everything wrong. No, they're doing some things that are very, very good. You know, let's not even get started on the V series line and what kind of a halo and brand recognition utilities and functions the V series line plays for Cadillac. But just in general, we'd like more. And you know, GM being our favorite automaker, and that's what we'd expect. So I just want to make that clear and kind of clear that up.
Mm-hmm. But you know, when we're looking at Audi versus Cadillac, one of the company's sales numbers, although you know on the surface it looks like Cadillac's outselling Audi, and that's true, but if you're going to look statistically, you have a company with declining sales versus another company with increasing sales, and the declining sales is the Cadillac. Mm-hmm. So when you're managing within the next forward thinking, what are you going to do in the next year, two, three? Cadillac, they really got to get to work. Whereas Audi, they're starting their work that they did years ago is starting to pay dividends, and they should still, you know, move in the same direction that they're moving in now, even though sales aren't that great here in North America, but they'll be moving.
Absolutely. And if I wasn't around back in the 80s and 70s and even before that, but you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Cadillac moved somewhere in the realm of 40,000 units a year. 40,000 units a month at some point or another.
Yeah, all of GM's vehicles were selling like crazy. Yep. Just you know, at the time, you know, we were all still so in love with our domestic companies that we bought them, regardless. I should correct myself. Our parents bought these things regardless of whether they were good or not. You know, their grandfather and their father bought a Chevy, so we buy a Chevy. That's how it works. But you know, something funny happened with the kids. You know, they rebelled to a certain degree and they went out and thought for themselves. And I think, you know, this is where the market is from here on. Like, just because, you know, you may be in love with Chevy and you may have the garage full of Chevys, it doesn't mean that your kids or even your spouse will be. I mean, we're now in a world where, you know, everybody is going to decide for themselves what they want, and they're going to spend a little bit of time doing research now that, you know, information is readily available through some little thing called the internet.
They're going to do the research. I've never heard of that. What is that?
I don't know. It's, I don't know, something to do with, you know, keyboards or something. I'm not sure, but I can guarantee you one thing. It's a fad, so don't worry about it. Anyways, right. That from the mouth of Bill Gates, anyhow.
Right. Yeah.
Anyways, I digress.
Hey, you know what's interesting is, you know, besides having the ability to dig up all this, you know, literally an unlimited amount of information online, or, I mean, if you're not online and you're still stuck in the Stone Ages, you can probably pull it out, you know, and get it somewhere else. But the other factor that I think is interesting to consider is there is no more perception, at least in my Gen Y kind of demographic, there's no loyalty to a domestic brand. I mean, there's no perception. Maybe it's not a perception thing. Maybe the word I'm looking for is there's no
patriotism.
It is patriotism to a certain extent. I think that actually is sums it up best. There's another word that's I'd say response. You know, this kind of mentality of just thinking about in general. that, you know, if what will happen if I buy a domestic car compared to what will happen, you know, where will the money go if I buy a foreign built or foreign a car from a foreign manufacturer? And there's none of that anymore. You know, all brands have this kind of a very level playing field. And I can almost guarantee you that if I come up to someone who is not a car enthusiast and I ask them, hey, where is Chevrolet from? Is it American? Is it Korean? Is it Japanese? Or is it German? And then I can ask them, where is something like Lexus from? I can almost guarantee you that they will say that both are American, you know, and maybe even say Chevrolet is from France or something. you know, that's...
Well, what makes things cloudier is, you know, the fact that, you know, you've got Toyota's being built in Kentucky and,
right. And
you know, and Cadillac's being built in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what is foreign?
It's where the profits eventually go.
Yeah, but, you know, you're an educated person. You understand that. You understand the level of investment that General Motors would make to the well-being of Americans and Canadians, but versus, you know, Toyota getting the funds where the profits where they put the profits.
Right.
Well, it certainly wouldn't be in a English-speaking country, but most people will look at it at their level, which is, you know what, the guy in Kentucky will say, you know what, Toyota's employing my next door neighbor, mm-hmm. and he's got a job. Mm-hmm. I'm buying one.
And that's a very interesting point. And the thing the other facet of that is to consider is that there. If you look, you know, if we look at the North American market, that is the case. You're exactly right. But then if you look at, you know, the sales numbers or even just the market share of domestic or American automakers, I should say, in a country like Japan, you have almost a 93% market share that's dominated by domestic or Japanese, in that case, automakers. You know, there is literally no market, absolutely no market for American automakers in Japan. And, you know, whether that would be for patriotic reasons or whether it's for, you know, the whole tax or currency thing they have going there, that's a completely different topic, and we probably don't want to talk about it right now, but that's the other facet to consider is what, you know, we have a foreign, you know, directly foreign investment coming in from Japan or from Korea, you know, from Hyundai, for example, into the U.S., but then how about, does it happen, is it possible to happen the other way around? And currently, the answer is no. So,
all right,
that's the other facet that, you know, it, and I don't know whether it will change. I don't know. You know, we're talking about the Gen Y and the Gen X's. I'm not sure whether this will eventually change. Whether it's whether the mentality, whether people will you know start to think about these issues, or what it will take to, you know, to actually open the public's eyes about this and. You know, I guess time will tell, as they say on the radio, but you never know.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. I think we can save our last topic about the Impala, about Zeta or Epsilon. We can mm-hmm. save that for the next show.
Sure.
We can let these.
But I will say,
yep.
Let's not get into it.
Nope.
But I will say, I'm driving a Zeta platform vehicle,
mm-hmm.
and it's fantastic.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Okay, zip, right. Zip, zip,
zip, zip.
No more. We got to let these good people go because, you know, some of them, they run into us and they say, you know, I'm listening to this show and I just pulled into my driveway and I have my iPod, but it's kind of hooked up and it's hot-wired into my 1989 Malibu here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to take my iPod out because if I take it out, it won't play anymore. So I have to finish listening to the show in the driveway. So I guess this will be the time that they will be getting really happy because they can actually leave their car and go inside the house.
Yeah, and you know what? You raise a very good point, is that a lot of people don't even realize that, you know, you don't have to sit there sitting at your computer listening to this show. You can download it and copy it over to a memory stick and or an iPod, and if you have a radio or one of the newer vehicles that you can just plug in your iPod and you can listen to us on your way to work. And if you're one of the unfortunate people that, you know, it's an hour and a half or an hour to drive to work, or even a half an hour there or half an hour back, then, you know, bring us along and we'll entertain you with, you know, something that'll get your mind off of, you know, that exhaust fuming Honda Civic with the big fart can in front of you.
What? I thought they outlawed those.
Well, no, not in some places.
Oh. See, we got yeah. If that is the case, then while you're listening to us on your iPod with your earbuds, you can just run out in bumper-to-bumper traffic and just stick a couple of wet rags in that exhaust pipe and then
yeah,
quickly run back.
Exactly. Or if you're driving an H1, put it in low one and floor it.
That would be better. And, you know, I think my version would be a little bit safer.
Yeah.
For the passenger or for the driver in front of you, but I digress.
Okay.
And you can also, by the way, you can get us on iTunes and in the Zune store, and we're free. You don't have to pay. You know, we say subscribe and download, but it's actually all free. You don't need to pay a single dime. But you know what we would appreciate is, since we do,
because we managed to qualify for TARP funds.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. We actually. You know, I was going to ask them to tweet out about the show, but now they may be reluctant to do that if they know we're getting paid from the government. So,
mm-hmm.
if you could, though, if you're listening to the show and you're at your computer or you're on your iPhone or smartphone or whatever smartphone brand you have, just give us a shout, send us a tweet, let the whole world know that you're listening to the GM Authority Debate Podcast, even though today we didn't do that much debating. And, I think that is usually the case with Hilton and
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
We tend to agree.
Yes. Well, someday I've just, you know, I'm watching, you know, the comments that Manoli sends, you know, to all of us, and I'm just waiting for one that's going to get under my skin and you know, say, Manoli, you're on, you and me, next week.
I can't wait for that to happen. Maybe I should log into his account.
Yeah.
And make it seem as if he said that, but then that wouldn't be much of a debate, would it?
No, that won't work. But even you know, I think a debate between Eric and myself would be good too. But when I listen to Eric, it's like, what am I going to debate against? Because you know, the way everything he says, I agree with.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
But if
we'll
see,
find
if,
some.
If he if even if you don't agree with him, what he'll do is, you know, he's a dirty mechanic, so. he'll drag you into a shop and pull a Fast and Furious on you. I don't know what that means, but I'll let your yours and the listener's imagination take care of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, since we didn't have much of a debate today, we won't have a poll up. But you know what? We could have a poll about whether we could put up an Impala related poll. How's that?
Okay.
We could put a poll about. We'll have a poll by the time you're listening to this. We'll have a poll at debate.gmauthority.com, and you can vote on whether the next generation Impala,
mm-hmm.
or should it be the current generation or the next generation? Which one
next.
Should we ask about? Okay.
The next.
Whether it should
yeah.
go, you know, kind of lean towards the more European side of things, or whether it should stay and be the couch on wheels that it currently is. How's that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll put that one up. And
you know, just want to let them know that there are thousands of taxi drivers and law enforcement officers waiting for these results.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And just like the Ford Taurus police car would, I think that won't be very successful, but we'll see.
Uh-huh.
There are plenty of police officers who have the current generation Impalas, and they're eager to know what you think.
Yeah.
Anyway, after you voted, you can let us know what you think of this show, and you can send all of your opinions. You can send your arguments if you disagree with Hilton or me or anybody else. And you can even send topics that you'd like us to debate on subsequent shows. Send those to podcast@gmauthority.com, or you can even tweet us up at GM Authority. That's at the @ symbol and then GM Authority, all one word. Also, debate.gmauthority.com is where you can get the show notes for tonight's show. And like we always ask in the end of these shows, an iTunes review would go a long way towards helping us achieve that stardom rating that we strive for, but not really. We just want to get the show out there, that's all. So if you can, tweet us out and leave us an iTunes review. That's all we ask. And that's pretty much it. I think that it's safe to say that right now, another debate is in the can.